I call the meeting of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee to order. A quorum is present. Our first item of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Lee, have you reviewed the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move approval of the minutes for the last meeting with corrections on page 3 with a referral of House File 3738 as amended to be referred to the Committee on Capital Investment Committee. Just a minor corrections there.
So you've, Representative Lee incorporates a correction to the minutes into his motion to approve those minutes for March 16th. Does everybody understand? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Ayes have it. The minutes are adopted. First up, members, is House File 3651. Representative Kozlowski. Chippewa bands authorized to open, establish open seasons for big game in accordance with the 1854 treaty. We've allotted about 20 minutes for this. Representative Kozlowski, I will move that House File 3651 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Oh, I guess there is an amendment. You have an A1 author's amendment, Representative Kozlowski?
Yes.
I will move that A1 amendment, if you could describe it.
Thank you, Chair and members. The author's amendment is seeking to remove some language, specifically Section 2, that the parties couldn't yet reach full agreement on over the treaty open season hunt. And I'm glad to share that I spoke with the commissioner as well as with the tribal leaders who are fully committed to reaching that agreement, just not in in-state statute at this time. You know, just also want to highlight that these treaties are a grant of rights, not a grant of rights to the Indians, but a grant of rights from them. And in that spirit, really looking forward to the tribal members being able to practice our treaty rights in our big game hunt in the future with the moose. Once again, after this bill is passed and the treaty payments are ratified, and we're able to move that forward.
Any questions on the A1 amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The ayes have it. A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Kozlowski, to your bill, House File 3651, as amended.
Great. Well, thank you. Miigwech, everybody. Ozoa Anaquad, Magizinen Dodem, Gitchi Onagiming, Minawa, Nagaji Wanang, Masabi Kong, Nindun Jaba, Migichi Wendem. It's a good day to be here to present House File 3651. This is a follow-up to last year's bill that we were here presenting, which provided an additional $3 million to increase the 1854 treaty payment. As we've learned as members and colleagues at the Tribal Relations Day and beyond, the U.S. Constitution holds that treaties are the supreme law of the land and today continue to affirm the inherent sovereignty of Native nations. And as you may know, the 1854 Treaty Authority is an intertribal natural resource management organization with the members and the bands here today to ensure that our rights are secured to member Indian tribes granted by the treaties of the United States. Specifically, this is dealing with the Treaty of La Pointe, or the Treaty of 1854, that ensures the right to hunt, fish, and gather within our ceded territories. And the Treaty Authority protects and preserves and enhances that benefit for not only current but future Indian tribal members in a manner that's consistent with those rights. And last year's language required the Commissioner of DNR to work with the signatory tribes, particularly Boyce Ford and Grand Portage, to update and to amend the affected agreement. And over the past year, the tribes and the DNR have had ongoing conversations and productive around the amendment, and it was determined that the agreement would be amended to then reflect the increase in the base treaty payment, and that would be appropriated by the legislature. So this bill, if included in the omnibus bill, along with the appropriation, would signify the legislative ratification of the settlement agreement amendment. And with that, I would like to turn it over to our testifiers and to humbly to our tribal leaders.
Thank you. Chair Kathy Chavers, Boys Fort Band. Welcome.
Panin Buju, Migazima Koi, Koi Indigenous Cause. I'm Kathy Chavers, Tribal Chairwoman of the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa. I am also the president of the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe. We are, with Chairman Deschamp and myself, are the two tribes left in the 1854 treaty agreement. Fond du Lac has negotiated their separate agreement. With the 1854 treaty area, We rely on that area for our hunting and fishing and gathering rights. And it was 6 million acres, of course, when it first started. Now we're down to about 20% usage of that area. But the base payment has not, the base payment, because there's a formula to this treaty, the base payment has not been increased at all since its inception in the 1980s. And with inflation and consumer price index, all the increases throughout the years, this minimal base payment, which comes to each of our tribal members one time a year as a per capita payment, which is exempted as income, isn't really a lot of money. And we only distribute it in August, we do, and it's used for our tribal members to get their kids' school clothes, to buy groceries, to do these things that they haven't had an opportunity to do in the past. But, you know, for allowing us to have the treaty rights still to do our hunting and gathering, and we have traditional medicines there. We have the largest maple sugar stand there for our maple sugaring. It's who we are. It's our culture and whatever. It would be nice to continue that $6 million increase to the base payment for our tribal members, as it is becoming more and more difficult to even find areas with private landowners to access to do our gathering and hunting fishing rights. So I just want to say that I really would like to have your support in with the $6 million base funding continue. And we are working with the DNR, and we know that we have to have partnerships and collaborations within the agencies and within the state. And I know Boys Fort and Grand Portage are really looking forward to those conversations. Chairman Deschamps.
Ani Bougie, Robert Dittria, and the Grand Portage Tribal Chair. I was here last year and testified on this. We really appreciate the $3 million increase last year that Grand Portage got, and the $3 million for Boys Fort. It definitely made a change in the people's looking at the treaty agreement that we have. You know, it's been sitting as it is since the 1980s. With inflation, there's been no adjustment to it until last year. I think they've seen, with the increased payment, our members seen value in it now, where that was kind of slipping away before. We do have fewer and fewer members that are actually out exercising their treaty rights, mm-hmm. not just because of the land base going down, but also age. You know, our population is yes. definitely aging. They're not able to get out there and exercise those rights like they used to. And as you all know, the decrease in the moose numbers, the decrease in the deer population, it's getting harder for them to go out and get a moose or a deer, you know, to feed their families. So I guess I'll just agree with a lot of the things that Kathy said here, well, everything, I guess, and appreciate the time, and hopefully we can move forward with this together and keep the base payment up for
it. So,
thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill?
April?
Members, any questions? Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for coming in with this bill. I recall the bill from I believe last year, and I want to just follow up. I believe the rider language in last year's bill, and then you cited part of it, Representative, was that the DNR must work with the signatory tribes to update and amend the affected agreement. And I think we started to head towards the answer to my question, but I just want to just confirm if this bill is the product of those negotiations that were mentioned.
Representative Koslowski.
Sure. Thank you, Chair Hansen, and Representative Heintzman for the question. Yes, this last year the bill said that the state DNR and the bands would open up the agreement, and then over the course of the year, and sure the tribal members, leaders can expand much more fully on the course of those conversations, but this is as a result of opening that up last year and then continuing that forward and looking at not just a one-time payment, but continuing that into the tails going forward with the payment.
Would either of the chairs want to respond?
I guess I know our attorneys have been working with the DNR for probably the past 8 months or since session closed. So this is kind of, this is the product of that. So.
And we knew that, you know, the next legislative session was going to come up fast. And so we kind of jumped on it right away with our attorneys and the DNR to get this in the works as soon as we could. And so we have been having our attorneys meet with the DNR and the assistant and assistant commissioner and commissioner so that we can get to the finish line, I guess if I could say that, because it is very important for our tribal members.
Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it be possible to get some feedback from DNR on that and let us for the benefit of the committee, it'd be nice to know kind of where things are at from DNR's perspective.
Is there someone from the DNR, Commissioner Meyer? Welcome. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. And I do want to say we have a great relationship with Grand Portage and Boyce Fort. We appreciate everything that we do together. It's a pleasure to be here at the table with them. We have been working on the language as amended. The challenge that we have, we came to a kind of an impasse that the bands rightfully so wanted to see that agreement amended with the updated dollars. But since they're only one time appropriated, the DNR cannot commit future legislatures in an agreement. The legislature has to appropriate those funds in perpetuity so then we cannot ratify that into the treaty agreement. And that's where we stand right now. The big game season is something we agree we need to resolve. When the treaty was first written in 1988, the Memorandum of Agreement, it was never thought of as a decreasing moose population. Climate change wasn't even around. I think we were probably dealing with acid rain a little bit back then, but climate change wasn't there. So we never, the agreements are written, and this is something we need to look at all of our agreements with all the bands. Climate change is real. It's changing everything. It's going to change our moose population, our deer population, the trees that are in the ceded territory, the lakes, the fish that are there. So we, of course, want to work with the bands to get it ratified, and once this appropriation language is straightened out either this year or next year, we will make sure that that's reflected in the agreement as well.
Any other questions, members? Any other questions? Any further discussion? Representative Koslowski, any closing comments?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And I'll just close in saying that, you know, this is really bringing forward the ability for us to continue to do what our ancestors have been doing for hundreds and thousands of years. And as the tribal leaders talked about with facing aging population, climate change, we also have a resurgence in our people really picking back up and continuing those forward. And so really encourage you to support the inclusion of this in the omnibus and for those dollars that are very important to support our tribal communities in this way and put this into the omnibus bill. It's a good bill.
I renew my motion that House File 3651 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, House File 3783, Representative Koslowski, tax forfeited land that includes land within the boundaries. We've allotted till about 3:45. Representative Koslowski, we're making good time. I will move that House File 3783 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. Two-year bill.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members. And this is great. Ojibwe people are not known for our brevity, so we're doing pretty good here. thanks again for the opportunity to hear House File 3783, granting the tribal right of first refusal. This bill before you today would provide the tribes with the right of first refusal to the tax forfeited parcels within the tribal reservation boundaries. This is, in fact, not anything new. This has happened many times in the lands bill that's been brought before you and has always been in session law. Since it is not in statute, though, tribes must work really quickly and scramble to look at that lands bill that the legislature is considering passing and then determine if it's a parcel that they seek to acquire. And if so, they must drop a bill or make an amendment to have that right of first refusal language included. And so really quick, I just want to take a step back and just kind of set the landscape that from a Native perspective, the idea of owning land is a very foreign concept to us. We do not own land. We belong to it. One cannot own land, something that you're in relationship with, but one may live in deep relationship with it, in just really grounding us in that our regenerative relationships in land are based on generations of deep interconnectedness through our cosmologies, through our ceremonies, our cultural ways of being and knowing, and languages, as we just heard in this bill before. And the reason why we're here before you is because most reservation boundaries were actually established by the treaties, and the lands were set aside for Indian peoples in the 1800s for these tribal reservations. And at the turn of the century, the government changed its reservation policy with the General Allotment Act of 1887, or the Dawes Act, you may have heard of. This law aimed to force Native peoples to assimilate in the mainstream culture, and it authorized the government to actually break up our treaty lands into small parcels, granted then to individual tribal members rather than tribes. And these folks here, our amazing leaders, can go much more depthfully, but just to understand that the reason why we have tax forfeit and the introduction of the breaking up and checkerboarding of our reservations is actually because the federal government reinforced by the state. And so more than 100 years later, we're here now, and this has lasting impacts and consequences for Indian country. And so by granting tribes a statutory right to have the first opportunity to purchase back these tax forfeited lands within the reservation boundaries, the legislature will accomplish three goals. And the first, I think, is pretty great, in that it will correct the grievous mistakes of our government that took these lands out of tribal belonging and ownership in the first place. It finds a willing buyer for the lands in the tribes, and it would make the process more efficient and transparent for the tribes as well as for the state. So just to be very clear, this is not cutting a deal with the tribes or giving away land. Counties will get full appraised value, as in the language, and with that survey and approval costs would also be included. So at that time, I'd like to turn it over to our tribal leaders.
Chair DeChamp.
This is April's first time testifying, so we're going to let her go ahead.
No. April McCormick, Secretary Treasurer.
Well, Miigwech, Mr. Chairman, representatives of the committee, Representative Kozlowski, thank you for your opening remarks and words in support of this, in support of this bill. I also was able to add to your stack of papers a nice little slide deck, if you would like to at least see where Grand Portage is. Part of who we are is bringing our whole selves to this testimony, and so I wanted to bring Grand Portage down here to the Capitol. My name is April McCormick. I serve as the Secretary Treasurer for the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and I also have the honor and privilege of serving as the Secretary for the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, serving 41,000 members. I'm here to testify in support of HF 3783, which would provide Minnesota tribes with a right of first refusal over tax forfeited properties that are within the reservation boundaries. For many years, the legislature has passed land bills authorizing the sale of tax forfeited properties. It has included rider language, giving the local tribal government a right of first refusal over selected parcels within the particular tribe's boundaries. This bill here today would simplify what has already been done time and time again in session law and put it in statute. So just to take a moment here, to reflect about how we got here with the Allotment Act. As Representative Kozlowski said, in 1889, that was the General Allotment Act. Well, in Minnesota, it was called the Nelson Act in 1889. And so this is the period of time between 1889 and 1935 when the Indian Reorganization Act occurred and put an end to an allotment. And it became known as an era in which many lands that were reserved by treaty for tribes were carved up into 40-acre or 80-acre parcels. Allotments were assigned to individual Indians. Meanwhile, additional lands were opened up within the interior boundaries of the reservation as surplus lands. And by the federal government's design, these lands that were not allotted were opened up to homesteaders. So non-Indian homesteaders could come and receive a 40-acre, 80-acre parcel. And oftentimes in the deed language, it was recorded as for a dollar and some other valuable considerations. So many individuals actually received almost practically free land within the boundaries. This was an attempt, the allotment era was an attempt to civilize American Indian people to become farmers, to cultivate these properties. If you know anything about Grand Portage, it is clay and rock. So to have a homestead or to have farming or agriculture is very challenging, very difficult. And so one of the things I wanted to bring forward is just also buried in this history is the attempt of the federal government to make the Grand Portage Band move westward to what is now the White Earth Nation out in Manoman, Minnesota. And so this era of sort of removal from land was common. And part of the positioning that was happening at this time was that Grand Portage leadership faced a decision point because either they were going to be forcibly removed or removed to White Earth if they did not accept allotments. Grand Portage has never been able to document or verify that tribal leadership ever accepted allotments. So we assert that those allotments were imposed on the tribe. If you can imagine putting yourself in the position of a tribal leader where forced removal may cause conflict or warfare, you know, families having to move across large portions of what we now call the state of Minnesota, this was a time period in which tribal leaders were faced with difficult decisions. I think thinking about this sort of history, I wanted to share some Anishinaabe Mohin Ojibwe language with you. So if you look at the second slide here, we have Gana Wendama Min Iji Anishinaabe Onakanageyang Mi Wi Naganaziwid Nindabinu Jamananig. I'm a learner of Anishinaabe Mohin, so I'm still practicing. We have this is a picture of our ceded territory here with the Ojibwe floral, and it shows an adult, perhaps a grandparent, a parent holding a child's hand and celebrating what exists in this picture here is our ceded territory. And what this phrase means, it means to protect Anishinaabe traditional ways of deciding so that our children can be leaders. And I think that's really what I wanted to bring forward to you today is that the decisions that you make here in this committee have an impact on all of our children. And so when we handle things like a 132 years age old problem by handling it with this bill, we're actually setting that aside so our children can rise up and make the decisions that they need to make in their generation. Just a few more phrases for you. That Anakanagay word that I just had shared with you is the act of making a decision with one another, in relationship with one another. And so for our council meetings, we say, Iji Anakanagay, where we decide together. And so by presenting this bill, my hope is that we get to decide together how to handle the future of tax forfeited lands within the reservation boundaries. And of course, how we care for our land and water, Iji Gana Wendamang Aki or Nibi. And so, you know, that Gana Wendamang means to hold in careful thought to try to protect or restore. And then just for your quick reference, there's two maps. So you can see the treaty reserved reservations here within the 1854 ceded territory. Created Boys Fort Reservation, Grand Portage Reservation, and Fond du Lac Reservation. And then for your reference is just an example of what occurred by map during the allotment era in Grand Portage. So you can see the checkerboarding that existed for Grand Portage. We had approximately 310 allotments, which was 24,436 acres of our 57,000 acres that exist today. There's currently 81 remaining allotments, which are highly fractionated because each of those generations created interest in that original 80-acre or 40-acre parcel. Further, the homesteading, you can see the dark green areas that were actually homesteaded in Grand Portage. The light green are areas that were open to homesteaded but were not homesteaded. So you can kind of see how this entire loss of a land base was occurring during this time period. And much later, during the 1935 IRA, these acres were purchased and put back in to the band's name in the gray sections and were reestablished by proclamation. So in the interest of time, I just wanted to share a little bit about how allotments affect tribes and how they tell, how land ownership tells a story for us, because you ask anyone from Grand Portage and we can tell you where the best fish streams are, where the best hunting areas are, where the best sugar bushes. And so it means something to a tribe to have that land ownership reconsolidated and back to its original intent, which was a reserve of land, as Representative Kozlowski said earlier, not a grant of land, but a reserve of a homeland. Many tribes have used their own economy to generate fiscal resources, such as Grand Portage has done in the late 80s and in early 90s. We're proud to share that we have reacquired approximately 97% of our land base. And so we own it in that Western sense of owning the title. Much of it is held in trust with the United States government for the benefit of the band. And just for a quick reference, this is our land use map. And so much of it's held in either preservation, forestry, or wildlife zoning. There's very little residential area and even smaller yet commercial areas that are designated. To be clear, this bill is not giving any land away. Rather, what I'd like to say is that it's almost like a homecoming. And I wanted to just share some more Anishinaabe Mo'win, Azagiwe, to return home. And it means like implying a previous presence and that there's a respect for the order of things and a desire to allow things that have been pulled away to Azagiwe to return home. Tribes are obviously willing to pay for and assert the appraised value, including any costs of any survey or appraisal. So there really is no fiscal cost to the state for this legislative enactment. We at Grand Portage, and I know many of my tribal colleagues in government, appreciate the relationships that we've had with our local county government officials and alongside our representatives serving here at the Capitol and those across the state. In closing, the state government right now has an opportunity to address the problems that were created by this Allotment Act by providing a mechanism for our tribes to have the first priority in acquiring tax forfeited lands within the boundaries of the reservation. This land was reserved by treaty for the tribe and should be considered before any other individual interests that have an opportunity to acquire these parcels. Chi Miigwech, for the time and your willingness to listen as I share language and our story, and I'm open to any questions. Miigwech. Thank you.
Thank you. We have several testifiers, so Kirsten Johnson and then Dave Vipon.
Kirsten Johnson, Indigenous and Anishinaabe. My name is Kirsten Johnson. I am a member of the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. I'm a land back advocate, and I have been researching this as a member of the Humphrey Policy Fellows Group for the last year. and I'm here not to speak on behalf of the university or the tribe or anyone other than my research and myself in support of HF 3783. I think everyone here has done a great job kind of telling the history, but some of our opponents have been saying that we're trying to go back in time with some of these land back activities. I'm here to say that the future of tribal nations across the country is land reclamation. For the Ojibwe in Minnesota, that means reasserting our sovereignty for the reservations given to us by the government 170 years ago. A lot of people outside of Indian country don't know that we don't own most of our land within the reservation boundaries, short of Red Lake Reservation. But in recent years, we've been reclaiming them in various ways. So you have Boys Fort just bought back 28,000 acres in conjunction with the Conservation Fund. The Leech Lake Band was awarded the Chippewa National Forest 11,000 acres and counting as they continue to survey. The White Earth Tribe is trying to do that same basis for the White Earth State Forest. Grand Portage are working with the Department of Transportation to get some of their shoreline back. Fond du Lac is partnering with the U of M to get reservation acreage that's been in their possession. And the Mille Lacs Band had to assert their boundaries legally against Mille Lacs County and won in 2022 to reiterate that their reservation boundaries are valid. All of those are untying land from another organization that has an active claim on them. This bill, tribes are offered available land, which removes that friction point of untying and compensates the counties and therefore the neighboring non-natives on the reservation fairly. In all of my research of modalities on land back, other than non-native people willingly gifting or selling their land back to the tribe, this is the least contentious and fairest way for our tribes to get back the reservation land that has rightfully been ours for 170 years and beyond. Thank you, Miigwech.
Thank you. Next, Dave Vipon, Manoman County resident and farmer. And before Mr. Vipon starts, just we don't allow any props and also any displays. So if the signs could go down a bit. So thank you. Mr. Vipon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. As you stated, I'm Dave Vipon. I've lived on the White Earth Reservation for the last 35 years. Raised my five children there. Have many friends who are tribal members, enrolled, descendants, as well as non-native people. This bill to allow the tribes first right of refusal, it's not good for the counties, and I'm friends with the county commissioner of Manoman County is an enrolled member, and him and I were discussing this bill this morning, and he said this is not good for Manoman County. It's not good for the local people that want to take these lands and might want to actually buy those lands competitively. And absolutely, the tribe has the right to competitively bid against those lands. But I, as a non-native, or even my friend as a tribal member, may want to buy those lands for business use, for personal use. This bill would prevent them from doing that, because anytime you have right of first refusal, you basically have taken away the bidding process, because the tribe is going to come in and buy it. There's no sense of actually throwing the bids in there and raising the price to the current market price of that property. So I would ask the committee to not pass this bill, because the friends that I have that are native descendants and farmers like myself in Manoman County see this as a negative for the county, and not just non-natives. For the natives that live and work around me and our friends see this as negative for them also. Thank you.
Thank you. David Garay, Manoman County Commissioner, and then next Richard Varberg, Becker County Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for letting me speak today on this topic. I'm here on behalf of the Manoman County Commissioners. I represent District 2 in Manoman County. I, too, have been there my entire life, 44 years, tribal members. I'm friends with a lot of them, and we're getting feedback to oppose this bill. Manoman County is a small county up in northwest Minnesota. Our county is one of the poorest counties in the state. We are completely within the White Earth Reservation. The consequences of this House File 3783 would be devastating to our county, as lands purchased by tribal nations are typically taken off tax rolls and put into tribal trust. Manoman County has no way to replace this lost revenue. House File 3783 also takes away the competitive bidding process in land sales for forfeited tax lands and takes away Minoman County's ability to maintain its tax base. It also prevents citizens from purchasing property on public auction. Minoman County strongly opposes House File 3783, and it does. It definitely takes away, and I truly feel down here we are forgotten about as Minoman County. We never hear about these bills until it's down here. We're scrambling, and I believe when we do land sales already, the tribe is notified, and it's got to go through a lengthy process already when it comes to tax forfeited lands, if I'm correct. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Richard Verberg, Becker County Commissioner, and then Todd Simonson, Clearwater County landowner.
Hello, my name is Richard Verberg. I'm a current Becker County Commissioner and here before you today to express my opposition to House File 3783. I'd like to share facts with you today and remove speculation on the history of land within the reservation. Prior to 1900, the White Earth Band was given two options: to keep the reservation closed and have the land held in federal trust, or to divide the land among the members based on blood quantum. However, portions of land were also sold by guardians and some deemed illegally taken. The band elected to divide the land and the process began. Fast forward through time and much of the land was rightfully sold by the property owner. However, some of it was sold by guardians of minors and some deemed illegally taken. To clear titles on those portions of land mentioned, the White Earth Land Settlement Act was created by the United States Congress. The agreement between the United States and White Earth Band included 10,000 acres of land to be transferred to the tribe, and the tribe received a payment of $6.6 million to mend all clouded titles. With this information, I ask you, why are we continuing to dispute past settlements? Since these recent bills have been introduced into the House and Senate, it has done nothing but to divide the communities of Becker, Minoman, and Clearwater counties. I do not feel it is appropriate for any ethnicity to have first right of refusal on any type of land within any boundaries. If passed, this will create more segregation and rescind agreements of the past. Thank you for your opportunity to share my opinion.
Todd Simonson, Clearwater County landowner.
Greetings, everyone. My name is Todd Simonson, and I'm a business owner and landowner in Becker County and Clearwater County. As it stands now, the White Earth Band has full access to this land. They can make birch bark products, harvest rice, bait, enjoy their way of life, and actually enjoy additional hunting rights, fishing rights, netting, and stocking of the lakes that non-tribal members just don't get to do. There's nothing the members of the tribe can't enjoy now that they would not enjoy or utilize more if they were to gain control over the public forest. And to the White Earth Tribe's additional benefit, the majority of the cost and manpower for this management is borne by the state, county, DNR, and voluntary organizations. And I guess I feel this has done very well. Last week we heard from Senator Mary Kunesh to tell us that we just need to vote on this bill to move forward and that we'll have 5 years to discuss the accommodations to do it after we vote and move forward at that time. No, I think we need to vote first and then work out the concerns and the issues with this legislation afterwards. Once we vote to move forward, the trajectory will be irreversible, as the White Earth Nation is a sovereign nation, state, county, and township laws will no longer apply. Tribal laws will supersede all laws. They will be able to do whatever they want. There will be no redoing this and no recourse. My question is, why was this legislation pushed so quietly and at lightning speed when the White Earth Tribe already enjoys total access to the to this public forest and can already practice their way of life, but without the cost of manpower to maintain this forest? The logical conclusion, and many others say the same thing, is that the ultimate goal is to make the state forest for tribal members only. We cannot allow this land to unilaterally granted to one ethnic group of people. To exclude the exclusion of others is just plain wrong. We can allow specific, we can't allow a specific right of refusal for any public or private properties. Again, this is just wrong. We cannot correct one injustice with another egregious injustice. The downstream ramifications of legislation in any form are enormous, far-reaching, and disastrous. I ask that all legislators vote no on this, and I'm just plain against it. Thank you.
Just want to note that we are on House File 3783, which was introduced on February 14th of this year. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Yes.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. Thank you, members of the committee. I'll be brief. My name is Thomas Houle. I'm in Minnetonka, District 45B. Indigenous rights is a big part of my personal mission, and as part of that, I make a lot of presentations on the history of the people here in the state and what's happened. One of the slides that I put up that I get the greatest response from are a Google map that says, here's the size of the reservation. And I ask them, what percentage do you think the people own of the land in that reservation? And when I say to them 9%, mouths fall open, and they say to me, how could that be? Indeed, how could that be? So I ask the members of this committee to vote for this simple piece of legislation that would be one step towards righting wrongs that have been done for a long, long time. Thank you for hearing me.
We have four members on the list, Representative Jacob, then Representative Finke, Representative Jordan, and then Representative Heintzman. Representative Jacob.
Well, thank you, Chair Hansen. I was, prior to this job as county commissioner, I sat on the Land Records Committee as well as the Boundary Commission. So you answered one of my questions right up front, who would pay for the surveying, so thanks for that clarification. But prior to surveying, and we've had some really big messes in our area with boundary disputes, how much monumentation is done and who pays for that?
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Hansen, and Representative Jacob, for the question. You know, that is a technical question that I think perhaps the tribal members of leaders will be able to answer.
Secretary sure. Treasurer.
Thankfully, I've had 4 years as the land manager for the Grand Portage Band. So the tribe would pay all associated costs with acquiring the tax forfeit land, you know, depending on what the survey results are or that has been required. We reserve the right to work within boundary disputes between landowners all the time. So we would find a collaborative way to work with property owners if the title records were not clearly defined or overlapping.
Representative Jacob.
Didn't really answer the question about how much land is monumented. So as a DNR, are they available to take a question?
And Representative Jacob, I think we had a bill last year, Representative Freiberg, on going back and remonumenting. I think we invested throughout the state. It's a huge task.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
maybe Commissioner Meyer.
And a little bit concerned for the author here. Okay. That would be a monumental expense, really, and I don't know that it would be, I mean, certainly the surveying, I would expect, would be the responsibility of those that are going to acquire the land, but the monumenting generally is the government's expense, and sometimes that can go either way, but it's very expensive to do. So do we know how the monumentation is in this area?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no, I have no idea. We can certainly check into it and get back to you.
Okay. So,
and Representative Jacob, the bill is being laid over.
Okay. So one follow-up question to that then. The boundaries that would be, say, on the perimeter. So if a parcel is partly in the tribal area and partly out of the tribal area, how does this legislation apply to those properties?
Secretary Treasurer.
Miigwech, Mr. Chairman. I guess also perhaps a question I have is the definition of monumenting. But the parcel, to answer your question about parcels, when a tribe acquires parcels adjacent to the reservation boundary and has full ownership rights of that, it actually becomes part of the reservation related to federal property and how that's recorded with the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And so there isn't really an issue if a tribe, say, acquires 20 acres on one side, 20 acres on the other, the tribe still owns that land in its wholeness.
So even if it was 1 acre in and 100 acres out, they would own the other 100 as well, is what you're saying?
When a tribe acquires land, just like any other government entity or individual, they own it in whole. And so if it's a tax forfeit parcel that the tribe has acquired, we still own it independent of the reservation boundaries.
Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Representative Kozlowski, for your bill. I appreciate being able to hear it. I want to say Miigwech to our indigenous leaders for coming down and all of our neighbors who came down to hear this. It's great. I love hearing these bills. We heard similar ones last year. I think it's a great honor for us. And, you know, the only thing I want to say is that I think that we can agree that treaties are the highest law of the land. And when we break them, we can't just wait out injustice. We did something wrong, we have to actively correct it or it will never be fixed. We don't just wait for the things we have done wrong to go away. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to take an active role in correcting what is obvious injustice. Thank you.
I'm Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll be quick. Thank you, Representative Kozlowski, for bringing this bill together. There were a number of testimonies who talked about tribal members getting or receiving new rights as a result of this bill. Can you explain what it means to retain rights under a treaty, maybe either you or one of your testifiers, just to kind of clear that up for committee members?
Representative Kozlowski or Secretary Treasurer?
We could be here a while. But what I would just say is that tribes retain all rights that haven't expressly been granted away by Congress. And so treaties are the method in which the federal government, in diplomatic relations with treaty tribes, entered into agreements, most of which were for land cessions. So, for example, for Grand Portage, Boys Fort, and Fond du Lac, we ceded the entire 1854 ceded territory in order to reserve our land in the reservations, the three reservations. And so we also retain the right to hunt, fish, and gather within the ceded territory. Many treaty tribes have different provisions within their treaties. So I guess the simplest answer is our tribal citizens have a distinct socio-political status as citizens of our tribe. We're not a simple minority or ethnic group. And so we also can be state citizens, U.S. citizens. And so I just want to acknowledge the fact that our rights exist, but we also have this distinct socio-political status as citizens of our tribe. So does that help answer your question?
Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Secretary Treasurer. It does. So just to clarify for the room, these are not like special like privileges that band members get because of a treaty. These are rights that band members retained and kept because these were band members that were here before the state of Minnesota and before the United States.
Correct. Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to expanding a little bit on Representative Jacobs' question, we understand if you purchase the entire parcel, it goes into the reservation. But the bill states that that any land that includes land within the boundary of an Indian reservation. I think Representative Jacobs was trying to get to, if 1 acre of land is in and 100 is out, it still falls under the first right of refusal, correct?
Representative Kozlowski or Secretary Treasurer.
That's such a nuanced question. We'd love to be the pilot of that experience. But, you know, I think mainly, you know, you've heard some of the dialogue from the testimony, and I think there is some counties who may have different approaches. Thankfully for Grand Portage, we have a good relationship with Cook County. And so we actually have had land returned based on that relationship. And so I guess how I would answer that that distinction is that the reservation itself was a reserve of homeland. So those lands up until the General Allotment Act should have stayed reserved for the tribe and its citizens. And so when that taxation happened, which is where we are today with the tax forfeit, an individual cannot pay taxes on a parcel they've acquired either through some estate or by purchase, then tribes do not have the opportunity to be first at the table or have that first right of refusal. And so really that's what we're talking about, is restoring land and having the tribe be in a better position to have the opportunity to restore that homeland. And so I guess I don't see quite the division between whether it's on res or off. I just know that the bill specifically is only focused on reservation land.
Right, thank you, Chair. And I just also, Representative, wanted to add that when we're talking about the parcels that are within the tribal boundaries as this bill is written, we're talking about 5 parcels in Grand Portage. And I know that as we've heard some of the testimony, and I think that there's confusion in what Chair Hansen said, that we're here talking about this bill and not the White Earth bill, which there is that distinction that we are talking about parcels within tribal boundaries. And I think there's some fear about like access, or if you're a property owner and maybe you use an access road. Was talking with the counties yesterday who are very supportive of this bill and wanted to convey that they are looking forward to continuing to strengthen those relationships with the tribes across the state. And they do joint powers agreements all the time. And so that's not anything unusual, whether it's a state park or whether it's a private property that folks are looking to have access in terms of that fear of like just being shut off of land. I will also say that in terms of the tax forfeiture, I heard it referenced that essentially tribes were allotted to tribal members and that was done fair and square. And the other thing that I've recalled is we were listening to that testimony that when the allotment happened and that land was allotted and then turned into deeds when it was sunset, if you were a tribal member, for example, and I wanted to go sell that land, I actually had to change my blood quantum status. So my great-grandparent sells that land, say their full blood quantum, which is a whole nother trickery of the government and genocide, but you would actually have to lower your blood quantum so that you become mixed blood. And that was yet another way for the government to just erode and chip away at our future, as was also mentioned. And that is when it was turned into tax forfeiture. People weren't paying their taxes and lost. And so I just wanted to correct that that inaccuracy.
So,
Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So in clarification, and I understand there's 5 parcels in Grand Portage, but we're talking about the entire state. There's a lot of land in tax forfeiture within Indian reservations currently. So the way this bill reads, it just says if 1 foot is in the reservation, it would then go to right of first refusal. If it's 100 acres outside, 1 foot in, the way the bill is worded, it would go to the tribe's right of first refusal. So that needs to be clarified. Second, you referenced my second question, and that is that the tribes can do this currently. Sounds like you have a great rapport with your county government. That's wonderful. I believe more counties had that in the past, and there was previous bills that were mentioned here today that kind of unfortunately tarnished this bill, so that's the reason you're getting the pushback. And currently the way the law is right now is it goes to the heirs of the property, which doesn't change, and then it goes to the tribe for right of first refusal upon for appraised value and added fees, and then they can pay it. But right now it goes to an open market bid, and the tribes can certainly bid on that right now currently, and sounds like in some places the county does come to you directly with the land. So it looks like it's already being done, and again, there's a lot more land than just on the Grand Portage that this is affecting. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Scraba.
Miigwech. I have one of the concerns that I have is not a concern, more of a thought. How many other counties are doing what this law is doing now, where they give you the right of first refusal?
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and Representative Scraba. That is undetermined, as we've heard. It depends on county by county, but the current statewide process is that tribes have to scramble for the lands bill, and that's why we're fundamentally here, is that it is different, and it does depend on what those processes at the local, with those local county governments are.
Right. Representative Scraba.
So if Cook County, St. Louis County are practicing this already, which seems to be working, I mean, no one knows the worst or better of it. It just happens, which is kind of what, for me, the first blush of this is, is this just tax in the reservation, not the ceded territory, but the reservation land? The difference in the tax base that this would create has to be made up by someone somewhere. And that's where the fear comes. Like, is there commercial land that's being lost? Is there, you know, what's happening and within the reservation? And the cost of government, as we all know sitting here, is not getting any cheaper. So if we're taking money away, it has to be made up somewhere. But I'm not, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I think this at first blush is the right way to do this. It really is. But what would the hit be on local governments, and does it matter if it's how big or how small? But
Representative Kozlowski,
thank you, Chair Hansen and Representative Scraba. Really appreciate the question, and you know, I would defer to the tribal leaders in terms of what kind of economic activity can be happening on the reservation. Though I would assess that this land would. The cost on the counties right now is that we're losing the dollars that's sitting there in tax forfeiture status. And the reason why the counties are supportive is that this is a way to find a buyer that's going to pay a heck of a lot more than they are going to open market currently. And so that land's already sitting there and being, and of course, as you know, we have the Supreme Court ruling that has come down, ruled 9-0, that said that fundamentally our tax forfeiture system is broken. And that is yet another reason why, for the counties looking at this, is actually something that would be advantageous to not have that liability on the books of the county. So that and many others, I would say, is a huge benefit in why we are garnering such support for this bill.
Thank you. That's good. Thank you.
Heinzman, last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kozlowski, I just need a clarification. Is the intent of this bill to require counties provide this process described in the bill in cases where the majority of the land is outside of the tribal boundary?
Representative Kozlowski.
Chair Hansen and Representative Heinzman, thank you for the question. This bill is fundamentally about tribal lands within Indian reservations.
Representative Heinzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please forgive me, Representative Kozlowski. I'm not sure what you meant. I just will ask, I guess, again, because I'm trying to get at Is it specifically trying to address land only within tribal boundaries, or is it addressing land that is partially within tribal boundaries?
Secretary Treasurer.
Chairman, thank you. I think the question about the division of ownership with the boundary being splitting a parcel was unanticipated today. I believe the bill language is clear that it's only within the boundaries of the reservation. And then if I may, Chair, Cook County, for example, with our fee to trust applications when the tribe acquires fee land, has supported the Grand Portage Band in numerous fee to trust applications. For example, the return of Susie Island, which was 142 acres of an island, restoring a 13-island archipelago for Grand Portage through the Nature Conservancy is an example of how we did a trust-to-trust transfer. And so I just wanted to share with the committee that there are counties who are supportive of tribes acquiring land within their boundaries, irregardless of the tax base and the concerns about counties' perceived loss of tax. Again, I just want to reference that the land was not taxed until the General Allotment Act of 1887 and the Nelson Act of 1889. So really we're talking about remedying a taxation issue that should have never existed from the beginning. Miigwech, thank you.
And Representative Heinzman, I think the question on a number of the members was about, you know, what happens on a boundary. This bill is being laid over. I think we can have that further discussion to clarify that. And so, Representative Heisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will just direct folks that are looking at this to line 1.10. And it specifically says 282.01 to 282.13 includes land within the boundary of an Indian reservation. That could potentially mean partially, and I think there needs to be a clarification there.
Representative Kozlowski, any closing comments?
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members, for this robust discussion and questions that we will seek to clarify as this bill is being laid over, as has been mentioned. I just really want to just reground us in the sentiment that we're here today to really heal the land so that we can heal our people. And that's really is the future of our self-determination and our sovereignty, and not just for ourselves, but the way that we view everybody here in this room. When I greeted you, I said Bizendawiyig. That means relative. That means that whether you're a two-legged human or you're a four-legged or you're a swimmer, we look at you as we have reciprocity, we take care of each other, we take care of this place. And so this is really that path forward to repair, to restoration, to regeneration. And as we were talking in the last, the bill before you, and now with what we can lay out for our kids and our future generations, is that we were just little kids in the 80s when the 1854 treaty authority and the moose were populous, and this is how we sustain ourselves. This is our economies. We know that we're interconnected, and so this is really taking that step forward together and strengthening our relationships nation to nation. So really encourage you to please support this bill and consider in your omnibus. Miigwech.
I renew my motion House File 3783 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Next up, House File 4454. Representative Newton, study to determine the extent on which school trust lands are used for recreational purposes. I will move that House File 4454 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you, Chair Hansen and members of the committee. I'm Representative Jerry Newton, representing Coon Rapids and Andover.
If we could, if folks could take their conversations outside. We do have more bills to present. Representative Newton, if maybe just wait a minute for the crowd to. Please take your conversations out into the hallway. Representative Newton, to your bill.
Thank you again, Chair Hansen and members. House File 4454 requires the School Trust Lands Director to study the recreational use of the state's school trust lands to determine the amount of money to be allocated to the permanent school trust. And it's from fees paid to the state for outdoor recreational purposes. It requires the Department of Natural Resources to assist the director and allows the director to contract for additional survey data. It specifies the contents of the study and requires the director to submit a report with findings to the legislature by January of 2025. I don't have a fiscal note, but the estimated cost of this is, I believe, around $100,000. And Mr. Chair, if you would entertain a one-line amendment, author's amendment to this, is that possible? If not, I can work with Mr. Strohmeyer.
Why don't you present it? And this is being laid over, just if you can state what it is. So.
Okay. This is on line 1.13, after the period, to add the school trust lands director may seek expertise from recreation industry leaders when preparing the study. And so this is to include not only working with state agencies, but to work with, say, the Deer Hunters Association or Ducks Unlimited or boaters, those types of things.
Ms. Taylor, do you get the gist of it and can work with Representative Newton when we put the bill together?
Mr. Chair, members, I can work with Representative Newton.
I'll pass this to you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To the testifier?
Yes, with me, I have testifiers who are much more expert on this. If we can proceed with the testimony.
Kim Lewis, Minnesota School Boards Association.
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members, good afternoon. My name is Kim Lewis, and I am with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Representative Newton and I are old friends as we go back through school trust lands, and my colleague Denise Dietrich has been known as the godmother of school trust lands. So we followed these bills and worked with folks over the years, different committees, and today this bill seeks to really make good on one of the OLA recommendations in the 2020 OLA report, excuse me. We look at all of us recreate, all of us work within the natures, and we might do different things. We might snowmobile, we might do bird watching in parks, we might, snowmobile not this year, but do boating, a number of things, go to the BWCA and canoe or just enjoy that area. And school trust lands touch many of these places, and revenue is generated, and it's not getting to the trust, and therefore it's not getting to the public school children of Minnesota. So the intent of this bill, and with the help of Representative Newton in this body, we're just seeking to see what exactly is being recreated on these lands. The Cuyuna Bike Trail is on a parcel of school trust lands. There's an entrance to the BWCA. And so if there are passes that are purchased, if there are licenses that are purchased, if there's any revenue coming in, we feel that it would behoove the trust fund to recapture a portion of that revenue. And the OLA report, and I'll just read a portion of the recommendation that was made, is the Department of Natural Resources should report in its biennial reports about its progress in 1, maximizing the long-term economic return on trust lands unable to generate revenue due to policy or statutory designation, and 2, obtaining funds from the legislature or elsewhere to compensate the permanent school trust fund for these lands. So we do know that some of the lands are not able to be used. They're swamp or what have you. And a dear friend of the school trust lands and the trust land director can answer a lot more of those questions specifically. But we know that some of them aren't utilized. Some of them are very utilized. The other portion, a small portion of the bill, is to create signage on some of these lands. So if they are used quite frequently, like the Cuyuna Bike Trail or an entrance to the BWCA, that we educate folks that are using them by stating you are now entering school trust lands or something to that effect so that this can continue to move forward. So with that, I'll conclude my testimony and answer any questions that you might have.
Do we have Mr. Van de Linde, Minnesota School Trust Lands Commission?
Good
Mr. Chair, members, Aaron Vandalin, School Trust Lands Director. Thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of House File 4454. I'm going to try to stay off my soapbox today, Mr. Chair, but the legislature did pass a law back in 2012 that required school trust lands to be compensated for any policies or designations that prohibited revenue generation on school trust lands. At the last report that we did, that was $85 million. We've since updated a number of those valuations in collaboration with DNR and their valuations, and we've broke them down into their different components, if you will, so water access sites or old growth forests. We're still waiting for those appropriations, and I just point out that the Office of Legislative Auditor did issue a report in 2020 that said that the legislature should follow the law from 2012. So still waiting on that. I would point out this bill does put a lot of pressure on our office. We're a 2.5-person office. We already are undertaking a number of large projects. The asset management plan takes up the majority of our time right now, so we would be contracting for this study. That said, there are a number of recreational uses right now that we do receive payment for. We just don't receive payment on all of them. We do receive payment for Grant and Aid snowmobile trails, the Superior hiking trail, and things of that nature. The ones that we are still really waiting for compensation on is 177 water access sites. It's roughly 41,000 lineal front feet on Minnesota lakes. If you just put a $1,000 front foot acreage or front foot payment on that, it's $41 million. That's about 1,100 acres. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would conclude my testimony.
Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to testify for or against the bill? Members, are there any questions? Representative Bliss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Newton, does your bill grow government? Just kidding. No, I appreciate anything we can do to increase the funds going to the school trust. I'd,
Mr. Chair, and Representative Bliss, contracts government for 1 year.
Representative Newton, any closing comments?
No, thank you. I think Director Vandalin expressed it well.
Representative Heintzman.
I'll be quick, Mr. Chair. I just need a quick second. Just since Mr. Mandelin's here, is the January 15, 2025 date, is that workable for your office?
Mr. Vandalin.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Heintzman, we can get it done if we have the money to contract for outside services. I will not redirect my staff to do it because we're working on an asset management plan that's also required under statute.
I renew my motion that House File 4454 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, they didn't let me do that on my egg.
Next on our agenda is House File 4624. Representative Hansen, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you.
Tell us about it.
Madam Chair, House File 4644, I would move to be re-referred to the Transportation Committee.
To your bill.
Members, House File 4624, this committee and others have heard issues relating to salt application for many years. You can't manage what you can't measure, so it's very simple. It would do an assessment on the state's purchasing of de-icing salt and using other models that it would set a goal of reducing the amount of salt used. The reason it would be going to the Transportation Committee is they have two types of salt, the salt that's going on the roads, but also the salt they use for their facilities. So Chair Hornstein would like to hear that. And so I appreciate the bipartisan support for the bill and would ask people to co-author.
Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Question from members. Representative Heintzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, just one quick question. The 25% reduction number, I'm just wondering if it could potentially be higher?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm, you know, Representative Heinzman, if you want to be more restrictive and more regulatory, I guess we could do that.
Representative Heinzman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I might have been in a state the last few days that doesn't use road salt, and you start to wonder. Maybe it does need to potentially be lower, considering your thought process there. I appreciate maybe we look at what is realistic, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Madam Chair, I was being conservative.
What a state we're all in. Representative Hansen, or I guess any other questions, comments, odd states for members? Otherwise, Representative Hansen, would you, any closing comments?
I think this is important. We need to be doing something. We all know the concerns related to salt, and we have to get an assessment on what we're doing. What is the state doing in terms of salt? So I'd ask for your support and renew my motion that House File 4624 be re-referred to the Transportation Committee.
Representative Hansen renews his motion that House File 4624 be re-referred to the Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, same sign, and the motion prevails. I will pass the gavel back to Chair Heinzman as Representative Daniels.
Yes.
What did I say? Oh. What are we doing? Okay. Well, I guess I will hang on to the gavel then, and Representative Daniels, welcome to the committee. But Lead Heinzman, would you like to move that House File 4365 be laid over for possible inclusion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that the bill be laid over for possible inclusion, 4365. Thank you.
Representative Daniels, when you get settled, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, this should go a lot quicker and easier than the last few without much discussion. First of all, thank you for hearing the bill, Mr. Chair or Mrs. Chairman and members. Thank you for the opportunity to be able to present House File 4365, a bill extending the water quality grant to Rice County for French Lake. The last year, the legislature approved a grant to Rice County for a two-year pilot project for the years of 23 and 24. The bill didn't become law until mid-June, and permitting and contractual concerns precluded the system from going operational for enough of the season to make a difference. This bill extends the project by 1 year, recapturing the lost year from 23, and reestablished the project for the 2 years the legislation has already intended to fund. At this time, there is no additional cost to this extension. This treatment system is providing some incredible results in my area and other parts of the state. I'm really excited to be carrying this bill and excited that what it can do for French Lake, which has some serious impairments problems. The French Lake project was a Senate provision that was adopted in the conference committee report last year, and this is the first time the group had a chance to talk about this committee about it. I encourage you to take a look at the testimonials in your packet of people who have seen the system work on their lakes, and use the first of my time to bring on my two testifiers, Dan Larson and Greg Biddle, who know a lot more about it than I do. I have seen some of the results, and Mr. Larson and I have talked in the past. It's amazing what the results are getting from a lake that's pretty much full of algae, and like basically a month later, we'll put this way, you can't see down 6 inches in some of these lakes, and after about 1 month of using this system, you can see down about 6 feet. So it's the results have been really, really good. So with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
First on my list is Dan Larson, Water Quality 3D. Welcome to the committee. Please restate your name and title for the tape, and then proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members, Dan Larson, Water Quality 3D.
an impaired water treatment initiative that formed a year and a half ago to address stubborn water quality concerns of the state. So thank you for giving Representative Daniels time to present this bill, the Water and Water Quality 3D, a chance to explain who we are and what we do. So Representative Daniels explained the bill provides a one-year extension to recover the lost year of 2023 and that no additional appropriation is necessary. So the bill was a rather late introduction in 2023. We didn't have a chance to get in front of this committee. The bill came over in a conference report and was adopted into the conference committee report. This is our first chance, our first crack at this committee to tell you about the new and exciting stuff that we are doing at Water Quality 3D to affect impaired waters. So everybody knows the dog days of summer are as regular in Minnesota as the passing of June into July. And for many lakes, that means algae blooms that make us avoid recreational benefits of the lake rather than attract us to them. So you all have heard frustrated constituents, or perhaps you have this problem yourself. Well, the Water Quality 3D system is emerging as an affordable, non-chemical, non-intrusive, Minnesota-made algae-fighting force of nature that is quietly channeling new hope to lakeshore property owners and local governments frustrated by the lack of suitable options to make sick lakes healthy again. The patented electrical-powered WQ3D flow-through technology quietly delivers dissolved oxygen to anoxic aquatic dead zones caused by nitrates and phosphates while beginning the process of restoring the lake to its natural condition. The device itself, depending on the project, is about the size of an automobile muffler and is secured inside a screened-in protective box that is small enough to attach to a dock. We've run numerous self-funded tests since 2017, the first being on Lake Crystal in Blue Earth County, and are developing a strong confidence in the ability of the system to reduce the filamentous algae that makes swimming and kayaking unpleasant, the neon-colored cyanobacteria, or blue-green algae, that mats midsummer lakes and makes dogs sick. And we've reduced E. coli in tests, in every test we've run, from swimming pools to large lakes. Please be sure to take a look at the E. coli chart in the back of your packets from one of the funded projects last year, in the bill last year, on Lake Alice in the city of Fergus Falls, where we dropped the E. coli numbers from 270 coliform forming units per 100 millimeters straight past the MPCA standard of 126 to 18 CFUs in one midsummer month. I encourage you to take a look at all the packet materials and get a sense of what others are saying and pay particular attention to the testimonials of Ron Tigan on Lake Crystal and Steve Hagen on Lake St. Olaf, who have seen this system work for themselves. Mr. Chair, I've got Greg Biddle here also, who's also got firsthand knowledge of how the system works. He lives on Twin Lake in Crystal, where we've done a self-funded pilot project that ended last summer, and we've had considerable success.
Mr. Larson, I think you've got the votes for this extension, and we've got 5 minutes to go. So, and another bill. So, Representative Daniels, I will give Mr. Biddle time because he did come up to speak. But.
Well, hello, everyone. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I live on Twin Lake, which is surrounded by Brooklyn Center, Crystal, and the city of Robbinsdale. And I've lived there for 35 years. And through those years, I've seen a pretty nasty lake. Now, this new equipment that we're talking about, he stole most of my thunder. but this equipment we're talking about, if you hadn't seen it in operation, you wouldn't believe it could do it. I was pretty pessimistic about this whole thing, but after the first last half of 2022, it started to really turn this lake around. And last year, this up 2023, it ran the entire year, and it is amazing. The fish are incredibly active, both the minnows and the bass, and it's been absolutely mind-boggling what this equipment can do. It's quiet. You don't see it. It's underneath the water. It has no negativity of any way of causing a problem. The DNR should be very pleased with this because we're not dumping in chemicals anymore. Some lakes, you know, they add blue tint to make the look better, and DNR doesn't like that stuff, I know. But this is zero chemicals. And the only downside is that to run the machine, it takes about $40 a month to run it electric-wise, so 110 volts. And the water clarity is amazing. Like Dan said, beforehand, you could only look down maybe 6 inches, depending on what time of year. But now you can look down 6 feet. I can see fish swimming on the bottom of the lake.
Okay, Representative Daniels.
All right.
Thank you, Chair. We just appreciate the consideration, and I think it's a good bill. Sorry for the late hour of the committee, and just ask for your support.
Representative Heinzman renews his motion that House File 4365 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill. The bill is laid over. Representative Nelson, House File 1788, sale of adipose tissue from animals and fish allowed. Representative Heinzman, would you like to move that House File 1788 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would.
Representative Nelson, to your bill.
All right. Thank you, Chair Hansen and committee. This bill would allow the sale of adipose tissue, and for those that don't know, that's fat. I've got a fair amount of it myself. But you know, under things that are allowed to be sold of big game, you know, skulls, some sinews, hides, hooves, antlers, things like that are allowed to be sold or traded. Meat and organs and things like that are not. And adipose tissue was one that kind of was a, it's not really kind of was a gray area, it was just overlooked. You know, quite often there's fat within the meat that's eaten. So yes, it's kind of edible, but at the same time, we're probably not going to take a big serving of it and enjoy it like you would maybe a steak or something like that. So with that, I have a testifier with me today that this came up because she makes soap out of bear fat. And it's a unique process, and I'll let her tell about it.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mary Beth Bazicki, and I'm the owner of the cottage in Hinckley, Minnesota. I was raised on a small farm in Sibley County where we grew our vegetables, butchered our own meat. Nothing went to waste. My father and extended family were avid hunters and anglers. For my entire life, I have used homemade soap from the lard of our farm and a lot of stirring in the kitchen sink. As an adult, I continued making homemade soap for reasons I would need more than 3 minutes to tell you. 10 years ago, I purchased a small shop in Hinckley with the hope of a small business front of holistic products for customers who hoped to avoid chemicals that gave them a rash and did more harm than good. And the idea of bear fat came as a dare from my sweetheart who felt I could turn any fat into a bar of soap. And after several failed batches, my bear fat soap was born. The hydration factor in bear fat soap is nothing I have ever used. Bear fat is the secret ingredient of a long-lasting soap that soothes a rash, calms dry skin, makes a fantastic shave bar. Over the last 10 years of my storefront, I have given away hundreds of bars to people with sensitive skin, dry skin, and wanting to avoid chemicals. 2 years ago, I was up in Grand Marais camping when the owner of a storefront asked me if I would be interested in selling my bear fat soap in her store. She only needed my documentation that I was legally allowed to sell part of a wild animal. And after several calls to my local DNR agent and even more to St. Paul, a very kind DNR agent told me my selling of any part of a wild animal was illegal, and I needed to stop selling my bear-fed soap immediately. I contacted the Trappers Association, and they encouraged me to contact my local representative, Nathan Nelson. And Nathan has been in my orbit since before his son was born, and his wife has been a frequent customer at my shop for years. And so, folks, I'm asking you to vote in favor of allowing wild adipose tissue to be sold. I'm not asking for the killing of a creature for its hide, which is legal in Minnesota. I'm not asking for special consideration, but rather to open a portal for soap makers like myself to take a waste product which would go from the wild game processor to the rendering plant, where it's made into something other rendered products which are sold. I'm asking you to vote in favor of allowing the whole bear be used. Bear fat is superior in the hydration factor of soap, as well as oiling and waterproofing leather boots. The fat, when mixed with other waxes, makes a fantastic skin balm, and I'm asking you to give the same consideration to adipose tissue that Minnesota has given to trappers, bison farmers, private fish hatcheries, and processing. I'm asking you to allow a perfectly wonderful and useful fat, which would be discarded, to be used in soap, and that can be enjoyed by others who have skin issues, allergies, and desire homemade products over detergent-based chemicals. And I want to thank you for your time, and I want to thank you for your open-mindedness, and in the belief that wasting nothing of our precious natural resources. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Rivers, could you give the DNR's perspective, or is that a thumbs up? Is that all?
Would you like to sit down? Sure.
Mr. Rivers, state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, Pat Rivers, Deputy Director for the Division of Fish and Wildlife. As a fisheries biologist, I was picturing adipose fin and how we were going to get enough adipose tissue to make a bar of soap. Having said that, we support this bill.
Members, are there any questions? Representative Finke.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just curious to the testifier if you brought any samples. Sounds like quite a product.
Well, I will answer for her, being that she's filling out a form. Thank you, Chair Hansen. Yes, there are some samples here if you'd like to. And I believe it's under the $5, so it's not a gift. So, but yes, there is samples here.
Any other questions? Representative Nelson, anybody else in the audience would like to testify for or against the bill? Representative Nelson, to close.
Thank you for this, and thank you for considering it. And, it's not necessarily groundbreaking stuff, but it's something that's important to one of my constituents, and I think it makes useful something that we maybe not think about and somebody else has found a use for. So I'd thank you for hearing this bill today.
Representative Heinzman renews his motion, House File 1788, be laid over for inclusion in a future bill. Bill is laid over. Members, we are adjourned.